liturgical renewal from the inside out. And okay, well, this is a session entitled Liturgical Renewal from the Inside Out. And I submitted a proposal for doing something on liturgical renewal, not because I've ever taught such a class before, but it's the work that I'm engaged in, I guess. That's what people tell me. I guess I'm engaged in it kind of by hook or crook. It's part of an evolutionary thing, and the reason that I say that I'm engaged in it now, I guess, is because now I've come out of with a songbook that is called Songs, With All Your Heart, Songs and Liturgies of Encouragement and Hope. And in the future, I've been invited to be a consultant at a conference on worship renewal and things like that. So a lot of times you don't define yourself and then say, this is who I am, what I'm going to be. You start doing things and then people define yourself. So that's define you. So that's, I come to this with a, I guess, a certain sense of experience because it's what I do. And I don't feel like I have a lot of skills to tell you how to do it or a lot of framework to put it in so much as I can tell you about my experience and some of what I grapple with in terms of my own definition as a creative person within the church. Some of the roadblocks, the struggles, the difficulties that I encounter in that and some of the joys that happen as a part of that. So I just have a lot of things written down here. What I'd basically like to touch upon is I'd like to tell you something of me and my experience in this area. I'd like to share some of my product, which is this. The third agenda is to discuss this topic as it relates to things like talents, gifts, the will of God for my life, the mission of the church, self-expression as a person in the church, the church's self-expression in society, things like that. Things that I kind of read about and get little handles on and don't have presentations around, but what I feel like I'd like to talk about. So as those arise, we'll talk about them. I don't have any particular order in how that's all going to happen. They'll probably all go like this. One of the rules of thumb that I operate under that gives me a great deal of permission not to have a beginning and an ending and a defined product is one time I heard a man say in talking about men's issues and how men are so performance oriented and everything has to have the start and the ending and it has to come out just perfectly. He reminded us that we're always in training for the next encounter or the next event. So this is as much a learning experience for me. See what comes out, see what pops up. That's part of the creative process. I thought maybe we'd start off by singing a song together here. I just want to pass it around. There's probably be about enough for each 1.5 people. So you can decide how you're going to divide it. Let's see. We sing this song, or this song comes to my mind as something we might sing because it kind of takes us into the creative potential within ourselves. I know you've been talking a lot about that in Original Blessing, creation-centered spirituality. And it kind of contradicts a lot of notions that I've grown up with, we're more kind of the product of God's creation than co-producers. You know, in a sense, we're both. We're products and we're producers. And this song kind of implies you are more than just the product, you're also a producer. So let's sing it. It goes like this. You are more than you pretend to be. You are more than what most eyes can see. You are more than all your history. Look inside and you will find there's glory in your mind. Come be the kind of person you can be. You are more than some statistic chart. You are more than the sum of all your parts. You are more inside your heart of hearts. You know that it is true. This body that is you has miracles to do. Believe you are more than what your leaders say. You are more than how you earn your pay. You are more than what you seem today. So drop that loser's mask. You're equal to the task. The question you should ask is who you are. You are more than what a preacher shouts. You are more. Come, let your spirit out. You are more. Your soul will have no doubt. Arise, become awake. With every breath you take, the God within will speak through thee. You are more than cell and blood and bone. You are more than just your name alone. You are more than all that you may own. Look around you everywhere. There's something that we share. The magic in the air is you. I think that's an okay song for a Christian setting. Oh, good. Oh, good. Not very Lutheran. What's not very Lutheran about it? Is there glory in the individual? I'm sorry not to have been a part of all your discussions about the Creation Center of Spirituality, and I probably know what you all thought about that. Or what you've resolved about that. Here's a story from Fables by Arnold Lobel. It's called The Camel Dances. The camel had her heart set on becoming a ballet dancer. To make every movement a thing of grace and beauty, said the camel, that is my one and only desire. Again and again she practiced her pirouettes, her relevés, and her arabesques. She repeated the 5 basic positions 100 times each day. She worked for long months under the hot desert sun. Her feet were blistered and her body ached with fatigue, but not once did she think of stopping. At last the camel said, "Now I am a dancer." She announced a recital and danced before an invited group of camel friends and critics. When her dance was over, she made a deep bow. There was no applause. "I must tell you frankly," said a member of the audience, "as a critic and a spokesperson for this group, that you are lumpy and humpy. You are baggy and bumpy. You are, like the rest of us, simply a camel. You are not, and never will be, a ballet dancer." Chuckling and laughing, the audience moved away across the sand. "How very wrong they are," said the camel. "I have worked hard. There can be no doubt that I am a splendid dancer. I will dance, and I will dance just for myself." That is what she did, and it gave her many years of pleasure. Well, there's something about that story that gets me. I guess the first part of it about the camel had her heart set on becoming a ballet dancer. Let me just say one thing about liturgical renewal first that maybe I could fit this into. It seems like there are a couple ways we could talk about liturgical renewal, both of which would be quite appropriate and helpful. I think one of the things that I think I talk about when I think about liturgical renewal is resources. And there are many resources for liturgical renewal. Fortunately, people are cranking out stuff all of the time. I guess where I operate is, and indicative of the title, From the Inside Out, I would urge you to look at the resource within yourself. That's not the only place to look for resources, of course, because we get resources from other people. But I guess that's what I will be talking about, is asking you to go in and find the resource in yourself. That one of the best resources for liturgical renewal is you. So the camel had her heart set on becoming a ballet dancer. There's a book by Mary, there's some tapes by Mary Schramm here called Evoking Gifts in a Caring Community. And I don't know how many of you have listened to that tape, but if you haven't, listen to it, because that's kind of what she's all about. And the first thing she emphasizes is the need to discover the gift that we have. And she connects that up with the will of God for our lives. And that makes a lot of sense to me as a Christian person. I'm kind of looking for what God wants me to do. A gift is not just something that you have and enjoy looking at or something. It's something you also share. So it's part of your vocation. And she talks a lot about how oftentimes we go ahead and kind of fill the slots that are vacant in the church rather than create our own form of ministry. Or as we grow up, we become the things that maybe our parents or others kind of say, oh, you'd make such a good this and that, rather than really believing in something or even discovering and staying with a part of ourselves that we know is maybe different than that. The camel had her heart set on becoming a ballet dancer. Something about setting your heart, believing, setting your heart on it. And then, of course, the story is about her exercise of this gift, her development of the gift, her belief in the gift. And then her presentation of the gift to others. What hit me as I was reading it this time was a sense of sadness. I hadn't experienced that before, so that kind of surprised me. I guess I just want to say that. I don't particularly like the way the story ends, but sometimes that's how it feels. That people are turning away, that you've got the gift to share, and you not only don't get a very good response for whatever the reason, either it's because people are too critical or because they're so caught up in something else, but you feel like you're left all alone in it.
Could think of a sadder ending.
Pardon me?
Could think of a sadder ending.
What would the sadder ending be?
The camel doesn't keep on dancing.
Yeah, just gives it up. Yeah.
That's kind of really a happy part of the story in terms of shows real hope for that, you know, that you can, that what they're doing wasn't based on acceptance or this perception from others.
Mm-hmm.
Felt that maybe it was which was important, so keep on doing.
Yeah.
But the sadness that the gift couldn't be shared, I guess usually you want to feel that you're able to use your gifts and share, and in this case, so that's the sadness, that there would be sharing.
Mm-hmm. To me, the sadness is that the camel wanted to be a ballet dancer. The camel wasn't equipped for it, that the camel didn't recognize its gifts, but and wanted to be something it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, is that your based on your notion of the camel as quite a clumsy animal, and so to start with, all right?
In other words, how could the camel consider that that was a gift?
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying partly is that
we should
there was a kind of a sense of arrogance, or not arrogance, but
pretense.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
it
misguided?
Pretense, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That needed Mary's tape on finding your real gift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe the camel should have listened to the feedback, right? Should have listened to the feedback.
But we only say that with our perception already sort of built in to the camel's character.
But I say that also from my own perception, that I might think I would like to be a great organist, but I have quite definitely decided that is not my gift. Now, I don't know if I would compare that. I would practice for years and years, and obviously if I had a concert, no one would applaud me.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would decide to go ahead. Well, would that really be using my gift, or would it be just struggling against something that wasn't my gift because I didn't find what my gift
mm-hmm.
really was?
Mm-hmm.
There's two ways of looking at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it came with practice.
It was well.
It was very good.
Yes, that was. The other camels didn't think so.
I've never seen a camel dance, but
15
years ago, I've never seen a woman preach.
Oh, Bill, I don't like that analogy at all.
My point being that maybe camels can dance very well. It's just we haven't experienced that yet.
But the other point would be that.
One
needs to know the difference. I mean, that's what we've gotten hung up, that people don't credit the possibility, but then also have to realize some limitations.
Or, on the other hand, that she may have got bored with it, it been a big smash. That happens too. Oh, I've done this, let's go with something else.
Fear of success, yeah.
So
it's, yeah, really. So a couple of questions that arise in my mind then is the camel society then kind of destined or whatever to not have dancers in its society, so it sort of will totally miss out on dancing. That was one thing that came to my mind. I assume this story is kind of a microcosm or an allegory or something of who we are. And the second is the last line, well, she went ahead and did it anyway, and it gave her many years of pleasure. It's one of the things I like about what Mary says in her thing, is that oftentimes a clue to what your gifts are what you enjoy doing. And I think we've been taught that what we enjoy doing is, usually we make a hobby out of it, or an avocation of some sort. We do it after work is done. But she raises up the question about what it would be like to persist with that and find a way to make what you enjoy doing the most into a more full-time pursuit. Kind of like Fox's thing about not the problem isn't unemployment, it's misemployment. Remember that at the beginning when he's talking about the ten problems. It's that we don't have enough room to create the kinds of jobs that people in the uniqueness can fit into.
I guess for me, the camel's mistake was in trying to become a ballerina or whatever. Now she had become a tremendous camel dancer.
Right.
Right. And maybe the others wouldn't have appreciated either, but
right.
Then she could still
yeah.
She was a camel dancer.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they were
that's the problem with parables. You can only take them so far.
Yeah. Well, and we probably all know people who are on the wrong track,
yeah.
Right? And they're trying to be something that they're not. And we probably know that part of ourselves. I do. things I would like to do that I know that when I'm doing them, it doesn't, it either doesn't feel good or it feels like I'm trying to prove something or, yeah, yeah. It's a woman named Mary Richards who has a nice quote in a book called... Do you know Mary Richards?
Well, Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah. No, this must be a different one. But I remember reading this several years ago, and I really liked it. It's, no matter who said it, you know. It's not important who says it. It's what it does to you, right? But she says that we have to realize that a creative being lives within ourselves. And I like this next line, whether we like it or not. And we must get out of its way, for it will give us no peace until we do. And I don't know, that touch, I understand what that means, not only in terms of my own kind of personal fears of giving something free rein and kind of going with it. I mean, the creative process, I'm not in control of, in a way. You have to kind of let go of control. It's a relational kind of thing. And also, it feels like generally society stands in the way. Probably, it's probably a protective mechanism against anarchy or artistic anarchy or something. It seems to stand in the way of creativity. But I don't know. I gravitate so much toward that kind of impulse. That's just who I am. And so I got a couple other things here that I really, really like. There's a song by Judy Collins, which I've just been learning. And it's a song based on a man who, I'm not sure who it's about. It's either about Duke Ellington. I think it's maybe about Duke Ellington. We'll say it's about Duke Ellington or some great musician who has died. And the chorus includes the two lines, he played the music of our songs. He knew that we all had in us a place where beauty always grows. And thought I'd throw that out in case you don't remember anything else, you can remember that. But just that whole notion that beauty is always growing in us, some kind of creativity longing to get out, and takes careful nurturance and a lot of risk, a lot of courage to come out. I wrote a song a couple years ago called Talent Song, and did it as part of a show called Talent Show. And I'll just tell you what the words of the song are. They go like this. Oh, you can't spend your whole life waiting in the wings when you want to get out on the stage and sing your song. Well, you may have been told you shouldn't be so bold. Don't draw attention to yourself. That's old. That's wrong. That's all wrong. You've every right to say what you want to sing what you're singing. You've every reason to play if you want to. And even if you're just beginning, you can make a mistake and not feel bad. You can even be perfect and not lose the friends you've had. Because my friends know talent when they see it. That's why they hang around with me. That was the song. And it felt rather a bold song to sing, but I think for me it was it challenged some of the notions about if you really come forth with who you are, take some risks, stand up and do it in front of people, that, I don't know, you're going to be accused. The words that come to my mind are like showing off, being somewhat pretentious. I don't know, that people are out there kind of to get you if you do that. You know, for some theological reason or some psychological reason, you know, you show a little bit of what you got, and people get envious and jealous of you or something, so they're basically going to hate you, or it stimulates stuff like that. And then the chorus, my friends know talent when they see it. Well, maybe I'll tell you a little bit about me, okay, here. I've got this little thing to read. This says, about me, Ray McKeever. This is the thing that little Vita that I wrote off about 3 years ago. And I assume it was then because Anya was only 10. So I say I have a daughter, age 10. But I'll read this, and then I'll tell you just a little bit about my life, a little bit more about my life. About me, Ray McKeever. My roots sink deeply into music. My grandfather played brass and passed it on to my father, who performed in dance bands in fulfillment of his military service and later became a high school music teacher. We never had a TV, but we did have a marvelous record player, and it had its effect. All five of my brothers majored in music at college. I graduated from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, with a BA in biology and with a high degree of satisfaction at having performed as a flutist with the concert band during my 4 years there. That experience was a fitting caption to an instrumental training which began at age 9 with lessons, contest appearances, band membership, and summer tours. Except for occasional special events like a camp talent night or a family reunion, I laid musical performance aside for the next 9 years in order to pursue a career in the ministry. I studied at Luther Theological Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota for 4 years and focused some of my interest by adding a year's program in human relations training in London, England. From 1972 through 75, I applied this theological learning, serving as a student chaplain with the Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Termination of my work there created an opening for my musical self to grow. For the past 4 years, I've earned my living as a performing artist. Music is the pivot point of my art, and I tell stories, show slides, perform skits, juggle, and mime as a way of connecting themes. I've expanded my forms of musical expression to include singing and guitar playing in addition to my flute playing. A growing desire to connect music with my life experience has led me into songwriting during the past 3 years. Up until this past March, I've worked entirely as a solo performer, creating and presenting topical programs for exhibition in public, in schools, and in churches. The first couple of years, I developed a series of semi-autobiographical shows entitled At Home in Myself, For the Life of Me, and Growing Up Male, which I toured in Midwestern colleges. I combined my theological training with my artistic skills to produce O Sun, A Story of Compassion, which is a Lenten presentation, Out of the Earth I Sing, which is a post-Easter presentation, and Magnificat, Folk Songs for Christmas, for presentation in churches. Interspersed have been numerous coffeehouse, conference workshop, political rallies, and cafe performances. During the past year, I focused more of my energies on concert presentations and have produced and performed Talent Show, An Invitation to Self-Appreciation, Love and Sex and Other Songs, a Valentine's Season Special, Ain't Gonna Study War No More, a Concert for Peace, and most recently, Brothers, Songs for Changing Men, on which I collaborated with Paul Bozing. Besides my musical work, I also spend portions of my time leading workshops on changing men's roles and behaviors, lifestyle changing for all human beings, and co-parenting. I am the father of Anya McKeever, age 10. When I went into the ministry, I wasn't happy there. So I like to hear stories about people that go into the ministry and somebody gives them the feedback and says, hey, you may have some skills for this, but you don't belong here. You belong somewhere else. I just read one of those in this book by Elizabeth O'Connor called The Eighth Day of Creation, which is another book that I'd really highly recommend in this whole area of using your gifts within the church. Anyway, she had a story in there about how their group gave somebody feedback in that direction. And when I stopped working in campus ministry, I really had no idea what I was going to do. But I knew that I wasn't happy doing that work. I wrote a song about it, actually, called Way to Go, when I stopped. I wasn't going to do this, but I'll tell you the words, some of the words of that song, okay? Things were not the way that I had thought that they would be. Reams of paper piling higher. Dreams were buried neath the sea of meetings, late appointments, and the holy coffee break at 3. Ties and suits, the uniforms of conformity. I didn't feel the things I thought a working man would do. Mornings weren't exciting. I was fearful. There was nothing new. And the pressure in my chest moved like the slow, sure turning of a screw. I said I wasn't worried, but it wasn't true. There's a little kind of refrain that comes in now and then. It goes, time to talk it over, time to think it through, time to know the way to go, time to look around for something new. There's a little break that goes, how do you do your living? How do you spend your time? I started asking questions, making small confessions, hearing new suggestions, following directions in my own mind. So I threw away my calendar, and I emptied out my file drawer, and afternoons when I grew tired, I took to lying on the office floor. And when I finally told myself I couldn't take it anymore, I left with just the nameplate from my office door. So that was the song. Anyway, it was a liberating thing for me, although it was a very scary thing to do, to know that what I was doing wasn't making me happy. It's not that portions of it weren't effective. It felt like some of it was effective, but I didn't feel happy doing it totally. And so it was, I don't know, it's nice to read Mary Richards because it's like there's this creative being or something inside me going, you know, get out of my way, I want to come out, and didn't know what it was. But anyway, I stopped doing that, and then about 5 months later, I just kind of led up to the point of, well, what do I have? I have music, and I could play the guitar a little bit, and I had written a couple of songs and liked to sing. So I decided to do a concert, and that was the concert that I did was called At Home in Myself. And I entitled it At Home in Myself because I felt like that's where I had to go, was inside in some sense, to find home. That home had always been something that was defined out there, get married, have a family, work in the church, go back and visit your parents. I don't know, it was like the socialization overwhelmed me, and I felt like I had to go back there. So I put up some flyers and talked to some friends and did a concert, and I'll be darned, 105 people came. I didn't charge anything, so that was probably why. But we took up a little collection, you know, and it's kind of like church, and it kind of allowed me to pay for the publicity, at least. But I don't know, standing up and doing that in front of people and singing, and I had taken up juggling a little bit, and I took some real risks, and yet a lot of it was about my life. Like people came up to me afterwards and said, you seem so alive when you did that. There's a part of you that even beyond the words and so forth of what you did touched me in I remember one of the phrases was, you reminded me of the humanity within me, the part of me that's struggling to be out like that too. And I don't know, I guess I believe that. And and that kind of keeps me going. So anyway, I did a lot of these things and kind of bopped around. And
is that the university you did that?
At Minnesota, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that was kind of the community that I'd... Yeah. Although most of the people that came weren't...
That's on St. Paul campus, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are two. There's one on each campus, yeah. That took me away from the church. I left the church and didn't know that there was a place to do that in the church. And I'm still not sure how much of a place there is to do that in the church, particularly around things that pertain to me personally as a man. So I was out of the church while I was doing most of this, and then in the last 3 years I've kind of come back in to the church and trying to find some kind of a niche. Anyway, I'll jump into this book. And maybe we should just sing a song out of this book, okay? I swore we were going to do singing and not so much talking. And I have only about 7 copies, I think, of this. 4 of them are here, and I took 3 of them out of the bookstore, which I'm going to have to take back, so don't mark in them or sneeze on them or anything. And Well, let's sing, and then I'll tell you a little bit about it, because I think to talk about the book will be to talk about some of the things related to liturgical renewal and that whole process. Let's sing a nice, easy one, Psalm 61. Page 37, I'm sorry. I just happened to be the one I opened to, so, you know, it's pretty easy. One of the things that we could talk about, I'm sure, is, or at least that I run into a lot, is what exactly renewal means. Does it mean, and some of the dangers of renewal. Anyway, we can talk about that later. But this is based on Psalm 61, and I'll read Psalm 61, and then we'll sing it. And then you can ask me why in the heck I decided to change the text or something, if you want to, which is often a question that I get. Hear my cry, O God, and listen to my prayer. I call upon you from the ends of the earth with heaviness in my heart. Set me upon the rock that is higher than I. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the enemy. I will dwell in your house forever. I will take refuge under the cover of your wings. For you, O God, have heard my vows. You have granted me the heritage of those who fear your name. And then the last verse. So I will always sing the praise of your name, and day by day I will fulfill my vows. Okay, let's sing this song. I think, just for the sake of time, we'll sing the refrain, and then we'll sing the verses in order, and then end with the refrain. Ordinarily, you'd go back to the refrain. It's kind of a chant, meditation chant. Just like this.
Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. Listen to my song. Singing praises of God. I call on you again, for you have called me friend. You have called me friend. So I call on you once again. With a weary heart, I feel so far apart. Feel so far apart. With a weary
There's a book here that I'd also recommend. It's called Christian Worship in Its Cultural Setting by Frank Sen. And one of the questions that he raises here is this kind of tension that always seems to exist between what he calls the cult and the culture. The cult being kind of the, the historical compilation of our faith. In other words, that which comes to us, the things that we can't just set aside in order to do something brand new. And yet he also then talks about the influence of the culture, and kind of like you're saying, Bill, and Eleanor, that we get bored, or not even bored, but we can't relate to the old forms or the old words or the old ways. We maybe can relate to them, but we have to kind of twist ourselves, or we have to shape ourselves into their shape in order to be them or to have some kind of a relationship with them. I know, for me, that's helpful because, part of me says, why do I have to write a setting for Psalm 61? Because the other isn't good enough. So I feel like I'm kind of putting down another setting, or, you know what I mean? And yet, I do it because it warms my heart to do it my own way. It makes more, I don't know, why does one do things like that? I guess I just asked a question. I guess I'm answering it, asking it again. Why do we? Maybe to be renewed.
Is it in the Old Testament?
Psalm 61, the setting?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So not much room for your story or your gift. What I've found in come to value in the last couple years is the people who I don't know what you would call them, but they act as my mentors, or what is the word? What would be a good word? Someone who keeps encouraging me, who I can't find the word, but. No, they don't inspire me because they don't do it. It's not somebody that does it. It's somebody who a supporter, or an encourager, or someone who sponsor, a patron. Yeah, I think she uses the word patron in the Eighth Day of Creation. We all need patron saints. And she says a wonderful thing in there that rings so true to me, that I am so busy, or we are all so busy. I'll talk about myself. I am so busy trying to do my thing, get it right, get it out, that it's very difficult for me to be encouraging someone else to do it. I pick a specific person like you, David. I know you're putting together this thing to do tonight. And, a part of me as a member of this community wants to be encouraging you to do that, to be watching you while you do it, to let you know that I really see what you're doing. And yet I get so wrapped up in my own, whether I've created a song yesterday, and if I haven't, then I feel like I'm not utilizing my gifts, or I'm going to present one today or something, and I'm so worried about whether people are going to like it or not, that she says how we all get kind of caught up in that little box, so that we're not seeing or listening with a kind of supportive approach to each other. And I just wonder how we can do that in the church, because it seems just the right thing, And yet, anyway, I was going to say that I've really come to value a few people who do that for me, who don't do it intentionally in some ways, but I realize now that the fact that this book has come out, or that I keep doing this, that there are people like that in my life. Do some of you have those kind of people in your life? Do you? For me. Yeah, I remember you from Milwaukee. I've never forgot that song. It's not like just go, pew, wow, far out. It's been working. You go, oh, I remember when we did this and that. I remember it was just great. It really touched me this way. And I go, wow, far out. Everything's been going on even when I didn't know about it. I need a lot of that, a whole lot more. No. And then my other question is, are you that to other people? You know, are you that patron saint to other people? Do you recognize other people's gifts? Do you see their gifts and strategize or pray into or whatever ways to support them?
I think we have to give ourselves the permission to speak spontaneously when something like that comes to us. The old German Missouri City way was, you know, like you criticize your kids if you praise them in public.
Yes.
You know, and we kind of do that to ourselves as people do.
Mm-hmm.
Is not just kind of locking ourselves in instead of being more spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you can't word it the way I can't word it the way I think I should. If I feel it, I want to express it.
You know, it's come out, right? The music in the book here has come totally out of my involvement at a church. That's one of the things I really like about it. It's not, because it's not something that I went away and hid away and produced to bring out and hope that people accepted it. It's music that was developed in community for specific purposes at specific times for specific needs. And I never knew that it would become a book. You know, my intention was never to make a book. It was to be a part of a community, worship life in particular, in this instance. Part of the struggle of that is that what I did was not always accepted. I wrote a song in here called Spirit of the Living God. And I wrote that because I'd been touched going to a gospel, going to a workshop led by a black woman at a kind of a worship renewal, citywide sort of interdenominational thing. And it just, we sang some songs in there, and I came out of there, and I couldn't help it. That's where I was. So I found myself looking at the text for the next week or 3 weeks down the line, and writing this song and bringing to the small group of singers that we had at the church, and we worked it up and did it during a communion service. Did it during communion distribution. And the impact of the song was so incredible. First of all, we sang it, and the people who were singing it, something was released in them. It was almost like we're in a black church. I guess I just crassly put it that way, you know. It had that kind of energy to it. And we sang it, and people were coming up and, you know, doing the ritual. And in our church, it's much more acceptable to have that be a more kind of pietistic, quiet, reflective celebration than it is to have it be a, you know, let's drink and feast and all the rest together. So, in some ways, I feel like it was kind of inappropriate, although we've talked a lot about that in our congregation, about the need for both. It's not just a personal pietistic moment between me and God, but it's a community celebration. So we had talked about it. In that sense, it wasn't inappropriate to do this song then. Perhaps the proportion just felt inappropriate, the proportion of the effect. But we finished singing it, and for instance, one woman in the choir, after it was over, she just kind of burst out giggling That kind of thing. I mean, she didn't know what to do with her energy, right? And then we walked back from the chancel to our seats, and there was just this kind of feeling, you know, you didn't know what to do with your body. People sort of looking at you, and there's always a degree of self-consciousness connected with that, but it was just that feeling, you know, you didn't know what to do, whether to look at people or not to look at people.
And
what? So, well, yeah, right, it felt like that's what you needed to do. You needed to move a lot while you were doing it. I don't know, I raise that as an example that a lot of who we are with our gifts, our potential for renewal, contribution to renewal, is going to hit some people the wrong way. You know, like you say, you want to spontaneously burst out with what you want to say, but you want to make sure that everybody's going to accept it first, right? I mean, that's the feeling that that stops us from going ahead and doing it. And
what's interesting is down the road, you find you were in the forefront and they're beginning to accept it.
Yeah.
It takes somebody to be vulnerable.
Yeah, right. But it hurts. There's a certain amount of pain because the people that it offended or that I heard say, you know, we don't want any more of this thigh-thumping music in church. You know, all of a sudden, well, that was the phrase, but all of a sudden I felt a riff. I felt the gap between us. And then I have to deal with that because they're people that I love. They're people that I do other things with, but it points out some of the differences in it. So I don't know, I state as an example that renewal is not an easy task. And it's no wonder we kind of hang off in the wings most of the time. But I also say it because 2 years later, you know, you keep doing your thing. You keep identifying yourself in that way. After I wrote that song and I got that feedback, I was furious. I was very upset. Now I realize a lot of it was just pain, the criticism, the rift that had been created and the fear of how I was going to ever heal that. You know, and part of me want to say, darn it, slow, closed mouth, staid Lutherans, you know, I'm going to leave here and if they don't appreciate me. And the other part of me thought, you know, I really want to speak back to the show, and that's not just me either. I'm more than that. So I wrote another song that was just one of those, what page is it here? 54, thank you. 54, called How the Days Are Filled. Yeah, but I wrote this because this is a part of me too. And, you know, the interesting thing was that their feedback, their criticism of me hurt. But it also put me in touch with who they were. And it felt like it kind of drew this out. And I wrote this song in 15 minutes. It was just there. And it was almost as though I hadn't written it, but that they had through me, you know, the style. Spirit of the Living God, Spirit of the Living God. You know, with harmony just bang. And this one is, how the days are filled with peace when faith in thee brings sweet release. From guilt and shame thou set us free, O God, our hope eternally. And, you know, I mean, there's a big difference in those, and you know what that kind of, you can almost hear the harmonies in that one, too. It's just that real. And yet, I'm not sure which song I like best, you know. I think one of the an important thing about liturgical renewal, for me, I think I alluded to it before, is that the need to focus on the resources that are in the community and to nurture those, to help them grow and contribute that way. People say, well, yeah, you can say that real easily. You know, you've got a gift for this. And so forth. Not every church has somebody like you. I'm going to do this worship conference in July, and I got this thing, this sort of letter saying, we want to tell you a little bit about the people that are going to be here. You know, we're not like Lutheran congregations back in the Midwest that are flourishing with thousands of members, have all sorts of resources. We're lucky if we have somebody that plays a piano. We're lucky if, you know, we can get eight people to sing in the choir. So it's you're going to have to adjust yourself to that. And I go, you know, I don't believe that in some ways. It's like saying, you know, we're a congregation of 300 people and we don't have any gay people in our congregation. Well, bull, you know, there's a certain percentage of people that do things. And my guess is it's not so much that they don't have that, but they're not nurturing it. You know, they haven't found a way to nurture the presence of the artists in the community. Anyway, part of the point there is to nurture the renewal from within. The other thing that I found important is that renewal is a thing that everybody has to feel a part of. And I think having seen it through, having stayed at the church this long, 3 whole years, that's not very long, but has helped me see that, well, it's like, for instance, like the song, like How the Days Are Filled. You know, I could have, as I said, I could have gone away, rejected the people, but their feedback put me in touch with them and informed me, and almost, as I said, the song was created through me. I guess what I'm saying, the word that I use is ownership. I think the congregation has to own the renewal that's taking place. When the first of the liturgies came out here and we started doing it at the church, the reason it happened was because one of the pastors invited me to do it. He said, listen, I see you write songs in this, you write songs in this, your songs seem real accessible, easily singable, the words are concrete, earthy, whatever. You know, he uses words. I think you could do a nice liturgy around that, just doing the same, using that style. He saw it, and I said, you know, geez, to create for somebody else and to have everybody singing it, that's another thing than to write for yourself. But he set a deadline for me and said, well, we need it by then. And so I did it. Well, you know, the Green Book had only been out for 3 or 4 years, and so it was hard enough for people having to learn that, let alone to get another resource and have to learn it. And second of all, it wasn't, you know, it didn't come down from above, it came from out. Now, who is this person anyway doing this? And I think a lot of, now it's embraced wholeheartedly, the people are very proud of it. They're the ones that wanted to publish a book of it so they could get it out to other congregations. I think it's, you know, it's part of the mission of the congregation. It's not my book, it's their book. But there's something about ownership. Slowly they took ownership. It's one of our own. They began to trust me. They began maybe to recognize some of their own input, not only as people who helped lead the music, but people whose programs, like, for instance, there's a song on page 70 called Offering. And this doesn't feel like a hymn at all, you know, to me. But this is informed by the emergency housing shelter that we have at Our Savior. And so if I write a song like this, put it out, we do it in the congregation, it's connected with the shelter, it's told the congregation that what they've decided to do with their ministry is informing what I write about too. So there's a real interchange. And you do that, and people may not totally like the style, they might not like the way you did it, but they like the fact that you took it out of them. You know, you're almost like the historian or the somebody that sets their words to the music. They're the lyricists. And so I don't know, I think that in liturgical renewal, it's not something you just do yourself, it's something you do in community. Well, does anybody want to make any comments? I think maybe I'm kind of wound out for the day here. You know, You know what's what that reminds me of a little bit is when I stopped working for the church and I went and did other things, I related to other communities. The other communities in particular that I related to were like human potential movement, humanistic psychology movement, gestalt therapy stuff, massage, Eastern, whatever, Krishnamurti, this kind of stuff. And felt very, I don't know how to say it exactly, but you know, it's like understood that, yeah, there is creative potential. You can shape things. We are co-creators in the world. What I do does make a difference, not only in community, but by myself. What I eat, I am what I eat. Things like that. And it was nice to swim in that kind of community because it spoke of words like freedom and somehow. And then, but there's a part of me that's church and that misses those rituals and that has known meaning in those rituals, you know, the rituals of church and sacraments and things like that. But there's always, for me, there's a tension between the two. It's like for some reason I feel the freedom and all the rest out in these movements, and I come back to the church and I feel frustrated because it's not happening fast enough there, or we're not tapping into it. So I just need to say that for myself, and I guess that's why renewal, it's part of renewal for me. Renewal doesn't just happen in the liturgy, you know, it's happening within the structures and programming. Anybody else? Sure. Next time, I'd like us to look in a bit at the parable of the talents, for one thing. So if you want to refresh your memory on that, I can't remember exactly what the text is right now. Does anybody know that off the top of your head, what the text is? I can look it up in here. Matthew, here we go. Matthew 25, 14 through 30. So maybe if you could read that and think about that in the context of what we've talked about. And I'm also going to put these couple of books on reserve. Now, these are my own books. I think we have this one in the library. I'm not sure if we have this one yet. They're pretty new books. They sent them to me as part of preparing for this conference. But if you want to look at some of those, get some further ideas to contribute. And then I'd also suggest, if you want to read Matthew Fox's Spirituality Named Compassion, any or all of it if you want to, but in particularly the chapter on creativity and compassion. I think he says some nice things about putting it in a theological framework and a church framework. And we'll do that tomorrow, the second session. Well, do you want to sing anything in particular? You want to do that one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
55.
Breathe in and take it all around.
I could play the other one, we could sing that, but I can't play it. Somebody else would have to play it. I can't read off the music. Somebody else, does somebody play music? Where's June? Oh, there's June. I wondered where you'd gone.
Can you play 54?
Can you play 54 and you just sing that? Huh? Sometimes just because they have one, you think they got them all, so
yeah,
you feel like
I guess it's true.
They become scary creatures.
Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome. Thank you.